This is Rock and Roll Grad School with your hosts, Professors Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling. And yeah, they don't pay their TAs enough.
Hello, kiddies. We're going to have a good time together because you're not going to hear me. Well, that's not why you're having, but
that's kind of weird. We're like each solo Lobo this week.
I know, it's very strange.
It's just feels... you on why.
I know. I'm not nuts about it.
Well, no, that was last week. It was just you on why.
I'm still not nuts about it. You're kind of enjoying it, but.
Well, so I think because it's rare that it's just me.
True.
I tend to be the one who doesn't get to come to the party. So it's, I definitely did not like you not being there.
Thank you.
But I did like feeling.
Did
like
you catch perhaps, me fishing for that?
Yes.
Okay,
but I
good.
Did like perhaps being able to like feel like I, you know, held up part of the bargain for once.
Wow. So what can you tell us about Simon?
Simon?
Apart from his new album, The Fighter, available May 27th, wherever you get your music.
You're telling me that this stuff comes over to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically in charge of editing and all of that, but you
yes.
didn't listen to it because...
I am playing dumb for the listeners.
Really?
That's my excuse.
Because this is your chance to be heard in this episode.
I know, but what did you learn about Simon? What can you share that will make someone say, I want to listen to this interview? Because it was adorable.
That's
the wrong way to describe the
it was adorable.
An interview. But...
Our interview was adorable.
Mm-hmm.
No, Simon is fantastic. Simon is going on tour with Deep Purple. He's played with some amazing rock stars. We talked a lot about what it's like growing up as a music fan and what drives you to go into this. He's got a phenomenal accent, but that's not...
Neither here nor there.
When you someone has a pleasant voice to listen to, it makes the experience far more enjoyable.
Which is certainly not why people listen to this show, but
we
could assume.
Whatever. Are you fishing for more compliments?
No, but if you want to throw any.
And Luke, we all know how many people love your voice.
I know.
I was going to save for another week or two.
I know. Well,
especially since I've suddenly developed vocal fry and I'm not sure why. So... Got to get back to losing that.
Just, you know, practice your scales and you'll be good.
Mm, yes, I'll work on that. But we talked Motley Crue.
There you go. The Crue, yet again, bringing people together.
Always.
But the other thing we should talk about, we mentioned it on our other show, which if you listen, you've already heard the spiel. So you can just not skip ahead. You can just take this time to send all this information along to a friend right now. But we are making a movie with guest number three on our grad school panel.
Yes.
Thank you. we're doing a film with Nikki Ciano, who is the DJ, as we always say, the DJ at Studio 54, and that is the least interesting thing about him.
Yes.
And we would love you to join our team and help us make the film. So if you go to greenlit.com/LITM, which is short for Love is the Message, which is the name of the film, you can sign up, donate anything you can. The higher, the better. But you know what? $1, you're still on the team. We're still thrilled to have you.
Absolutely.
Please come and have fun with us. And with that out of the way, here's Simon and Heidi.
Thanks.
In that order.
Mm, definitely yes. In that order. Stalking your Instagram and listening up on the newest single. Tell us a little bit, tell listeners a little bit about this latest venture and how everything came to be with that.
Which venture are you talking about?
Well, there's many and we're going to cover them all. So pick which one you'd like to start with.
I'm easy. You tell me. You tell me what you want me to start with.
All right. So start with the newest music.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, my new album, which is going to be out on, May 27th, I think. To be honest, it's been in the making for about 3-4 years. It was actually ready to go pre-COVID.
Of course.
But obviously, you know, the pandemic hit and everything got screwed up a little bit. But Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a long time coming for this one. You know, I haven't released anything really in a long, long time. So, but my thoughts on this album was I just wanted to do something that was, you know, me. And because before, when I've done stuff, there was always this kind of little bit of tiny bit of pressure to do something in a certain style or do a certain, you know, category or whatever. But for this one, it was just like, you know, the record company are very good. They just let me have free rein. They're like, do what you want. And I was like, brilliant. So, yeah, it was, you know, I decided, you know, it's basically the album. What you hear is just, it's like a product of all my influences over the years. You know, I grew up in the 80s. So I grew up in all that 80s rock and, you know, Motley Crue and Steve Vai and all that, you know, spandex stuff, if you want to call it.
Yes.
So I grew up in that. And, but, you know, there was a lot of other great artists from that period of time, like bands like Yes and stuff, you know, some prog rock stuff as well. So, and, you know, so I kind of, there's like little hints of all that type of music in this album. Specifically with, you know, if you look at tracks like Show Me How to Love and whatnot, you know, the chorus section and that is just basically, it's like something straight out of a Yes album, you know, if you want to look. And then there's another track called Back to You. It's got those Yes harmonies and stuff in it. So, yeah, you know, and then there's that track Back to You as well also hints at Van Halen a little bit, you know. And same with High Stakes. There's all little, you know, the way I approached that song was it was about, you know, just those 80s influences on the guitar where, you know, it wasn't just about, you know, big low guitar riffs. It was more chordal stuff and that, especially with the likes of Van Halen and that. So it's all my influences. Like, I'm a massive Toto fan, so there's probably, you know, things of Toto in there as well. And, you know, Gary Moore, just lots of things, you know, coming out in it.
So don't you think, so I grew up in the 80s as well. And I feel like people from our generation, there's something about the 80s in the sense that it, just like you're saying right now, we listened to everything. We listened to everything and we listened to the bands we loved, the bands they loved growing up. So we tend to have this really broad, even just your average listener has this more broad love of music, I feel. Yet I feel that the 80s, because of the spandex and all the wonderful theatrical nature of so many of these bands and David Lee Roth and, you know, Tommy Lee, everybody, that sometimes it gets caricaturized. Do you feel that 80s music's ever going to get its due, or do you think it's always going to keep a place in the annals of just being this time that's a little bit, it's weird to say, but almost underrated?
I think it's going to be the latter. I think it's going to be, it's just forever going to be known as the, you know, this spandex and cucumber era, if you want to
look. Right. Yes. Know. Yes. It's,
you know, unfortunately, because the music was unbelievable and, you know, the even though there was a lot of theatrics and a lot of glam involved in it, you know, and but the music was great. You know, it was very intelligent, some of it, you know, even if you break outside that kind of glam metal thing, you know, you look at all those bands from that period of time, even like the, you know, the solo artists, you know, whether you're into, like, I don't know, Richard Marx or Michael Bolton and all that stuff. But the music was brilliant and, you know, it was cheesy, but it was great, you know. And but unfortunately, I think it's just always, it's done. That's it. It's always going to be remembered as that, you know, that period of time where the guys look like women sometimes, right. You know, so, but, you know, it kind of went up its own arse a little bit, you know, in regards to everything, you know, and I think people, but you know what, it's like any style of music, it has its time period, and then it's, right. Well, people want something new, something else comes along, and it's fresh, oh, what's this, is new, you know, because coming out of that 80s, 90s thing, we had the grunge, you know, right. Which was completely different, you know. So
also amazing, but very sad and depressing at times.
It also had its time, and it lasted for so many years, and then something else. So music always comes around again, and I honestly believe now we're sort of, well, I believe music comes around and it goes around in cycles, but it always comes back not at the 100%. It always comes back at about, you know, 60 or 70%, you know, and I think we're kind of in that 80s phase now where, you know, there's a lot of more keyboards things going on with bands and stuff, rock bands especially. And just certain sounds from that period of time are now being reintroduced into the music. It's like, you know, about 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was all the 70s thing. You know, you had, I don't know, many bands come out that sounded like Zeppelin, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but now they're all starting to, they're still there, but they're not the forefront anymore. So it's just one big, you know, merry-go-round of things, you know? You just got to jump on and off sometimes, you know?
That's true. And it's good. I mean, it is, that. I don't know. It's good. It keeps us on our toes, I suppose. So of all the different bands, obviously from the metal to the prog rock to everything in between, who was on your wall? What posters did you have on your wall?
Well, I was a guitarist first and foremost. So I had like Joe Satriani and Steve Vai and, you know, Eddie Van Halen and who else? You know, bands like Extreme and stuff like that. So they were the posters on my wall because I was just a guitar nut back then, you know, still am, but to a certain extent, but... You know, so it was always Paul Gilbert, you know, Mr. Big, and, you know, the list is endless. So they were all on my wall, you know. Motley Crue, I was a massive Motley Crue fan. I don't know what about it is. I do know what it is. It's just the music is just always just feel good music, and it smile. It's like every time I hear that song, Kickstart My Heart, it's like, I just want to get up and run around.
Yes, know? I agree. Every time I hear the beginning of Girls, 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 that's my favorite. And obviously the piano for Home Sweet Home is amazing. But Girls, 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 as soon as I hear that whistle, I'm like ready to go.
It's uplifting. It's one of those things. It's just like it makes you want to listen to it, you know.
Yes.
But that's how I would just, you know, the 80s genre. It's that just feel good stuff, you know, everything's happy, it's party time, it's when the, you know, the rock and roll lifestyle supposedly all was at the forte.
The Dirt's the greatest book of all time, so
yeah. Hands down. To be honest, it's a hard read. It's like, you know, like you're reading certain things, you're going, really? Okay.
I know. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I can't help it. I just devoured it. Still sits on right forefront on my bookshelf. But
good.
When did you know that you were going to take this path professionally? Like, when did you just stop just being a guitar lover, playing in your bedroom and go, I'm doing this, I'm going to do it myself?
Well, to be honest, it's been a weird, there was never really a moment in time where I said, I'm actually just going to break into this as a career. I was kind of threw into it since I was like 10 years of age, to be honest. I was one of these kind of child protege kids when I was growing up. I picked up the guitar really, really fast. You know, I was able to play things, you know, very quickly. I was able to learn things very quickly. I know, by the time I was 11 and 12, I was doing television shows back here in the UK and things like that. So I was, and then I was kind of thrown into like doing like, you know, clinics for like different like Marshall amps and stuff years ago, and they brought me to some trade shows. So I kind of, at that age, I didn't know what I was just playing guitar and going doing this. I wasn't thinking about, okay, I'm gonna do this as a career. So it's just kind of, I've just kind of naturally just fell into it, and it's all I've known how to do, you know. I can't do anything else, you know. So it's just it just, everything just kind of evolved, you know. I joined my first sort of touring band when I was about 16, you know. So there's a band called Sweet Savage, and I did a couple of records with those guys, and we did lots of tours, and it was great. And then I come back, and then I got offered randomly a gig with a guy called Andrew Strong, which is Andrew's, it was in a movie called The Commitments, you know, years ago. And he was a singer. So it was kind of a bizarre thing going from Sweet Savage, which were a heavy metal band, to Andrew Strong, which is soul and R&B. It's like, right. But I was like, okay, I'll do it, you know. And he's touring all over Europe and Scandinavia, so I was like, okay, I'll do that. I think really because Andrew himself is a hard rocker, you know, he loves the heavier the better for him. He's like, some of the stuff he listens to, I'm going, it's a bit too heavy for me. But so I think that's why he wanted me in the band. So, but yeah, and then, you know, things just kept moving and moving, and you know, and I've always just done music, and I've been very fortunate enough that I haven't had to do anything else, which has been great, you know, especially even over recent times with the pandemic and stuff. I haven't stopped. I've kept going over that, which was a lifesaver. When COVID hit, I thought that was it. That's game over, done. Right. I was like, but I had a lot of online stuff. You know, I did some teaching and stuff as well online. So I just ramped that up a lot, and just that kept me going. But the only thing I suppose I could say is I remember when I was a kid, my dad took me to see Gary Moore in Belfast, a place called the King's Hall. You know, it's a big kind of venue, and there was, I don't know, thousands of people there. And, you know, it was in the 80s. So it was like that massive stage, you know, lights, fireworks, everything. And there's me, like, a 10-year-old kid going, I have to do this. And I suppose that's probably the only time I thought, this is me. That's what I'm doing right there.
So I
did it. So I suppose you could say I made my decision when I was 10 years of age.
That's perfect. That's amazing. And I mean, so many of us look at the stage and go, I want to do that, but never actually have the talent or the will or drive to do it.
And a lot of great musicians, it's the same old saying, life gets in the way sometimes.
Right.
So, you know, and some people don't end up doing what they truly want to do, you know, because other things take over. And I know I have family and two kids and stuff, so sometimes that takes over. But I'm at the stage now where, you know, this is my career and my hobby, if you want to call it, too.
Yeah.
So,
which is, I mean, isn't that what it's always like? Do what you love and you'll never work a day, or, you know, whatever the silly thing they put on pillows is. But it's kind of true.
It is kind of true. It's like, you know, every time any gigs I have to do, you know, there is hard work involved in it, but it's not like I'm not enjoying the hard work. It's not like I'm sitting in an office 9 to 5 going, I really hate this job, you know.
Yeah. Whereas,
it's like, I'll do it. Yeah, no problem. Hard work. I want to work hard. You
know? Right. I mean,
which is great. You know, I'm very, very lucky that I can do that.
Yeah. And then it also within your career and your own music and all the things you've also played with, you know, as you mentioned some already, but so many incredible bands as well, and been a part of their narrative and ongoing narrative of Deep Purple and so on and so forth. You know, just again, kind of what you mentioned, to sort of being able to switch gears like that. What is it like to sort of switch hats when you're with another band that has their own vision or their own history?
To be honest, it's actually been quite easy. Because I've played in many different situations, and I suppose the hardest one I would say was probably going from Sweet Savage to Andrew's band, because I was always the forefront in the band. I was the guitar. It was, you know, shred, lead stuff, all that stuff to me. And then go to Andrew's band, which was like two chords and you sit in the background. But, you know, I understand music and how it works and all the different styles. And, you know, sometimes the guitar is not the forefront of all types of music. And I quickly understood, okay, I am just an accompaniment through the vocals and everything else is going on. And I think once you cross that barrier, it's like you can relax and have fun. I think that's the problem with a lot of players. They don't know how to jump from one ship to another ship, you know, and understand what's required of you in that setting. It's a weird thing, because I do my own thing and I do various other things, whether it's Don Airey or Ian Gillan or whatnot. My own thing is all very heavily demanding on me, because it's my name. So it's harder, you know, than doing a session gig. Because you do a session gig, you just turn up and it's like, yeah, I'm just going to play guitar. I don't have nothing to do with anything. Just my job, play the guitar, and that's it. And I like that, and it's fun. But I also like having the pressure too, you know, because if you want to look at it, you know, because it's my name on the poster, it's all about me. So it's like somebody massaging my ego a little bit. You know?
Of course.
And we all love that.
What's wrong with that? should enjoy that.
But yeah, it's it can be difficult just to jump from thing to thing. But I've been all right so far. You know, I've played in so many different scenarios. I'm kind of well used to it. I've played in, like, you know, rock, hard rock, blues, country sessions. Believe it or not, yeah. There's a few country songs. Apparently, I played on. I can't remember, but I did. So, I'll not mention those. And then I've done fusion jazz stuff, and, you know, so I've done so many things. So now I jump in from different things. It's like, okay, I just have to take that hat off and put this one on. Right, done. You know, and get yourself into that mindset of what it is. You know, if it's a gig where you're not the forefront, then you have to think about, okay, I need to really make these parts that I have to learn work and make them enjoyable. You know, so, and it's, and you just have to learn very quickly that it's not all about shred guitar and playing lots of notes. It's like, the importance of this song is playing these two chords because it really fits in with the keyboards or the brass or the whatever else is going on. So, yeah, it's always challenging. That's I suppose for me. I love just doing different things. You know,
of all the things you've done, whether it's your solo stuff, any of the bands you've been in sessions, writing any of it, what's the moment that stands out as that was really fun? That was probably the best thing yet. Not ever, just yet.
Yet. I think I would have to probably say it's probably when I play with Ian Gillan, you know, because Ian's an iconic rock singer. He's like, you know, all the rock singers that we all love and listen to, they all learned it from him and Robert Plant and stuff like that. So when you're standing on stage and you're playing one of the most played guitar riffs on the face of the earth, Smoke on the Water, and you're like, I'm playing this with the guy that wrote this.
Right.
And to be honest, I had never really ever played Smoke on the Water. I always just heard it and, you know.
Of course.
But never played it live. So my first time playing it live was standing on a stage in front of, I don't know, 5,000 people with him. And I was like, oh, God. So, and that was like, just an amazing experience, you know. You know, because you're playing one of those, like, that's an iconic thing, and you're just on that stage, and it's like, wow, this is amazing, you know. That's probably the highlight so far, you know, in my career.
Well, I think it's wonderful being a success in your own right, and being a rock star, and being with all, to still be a fan. I think when we talk to guests like yourself who still have that moment of, okay, how is this happening, or this is actually happening, I'm doing this with him, to never lose that, I think, is really incredible.
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we are always going to be fans of all musicians. You know you can be a musician's best friend but still be a fan of what they do, you know. Right. it's just, it wouldn't be right if you weren't a fan,
right,
of somebody like that. Like, I know Ian very well, and, you know, he's such a lovely guy, and, you know, but he's still Ian Gillan.
you know
it's like, he's, when you speak to him, he's like, he's just a normal dude, and then you see him on stage, he's like, that's Ian Gillan.
Right, like, wait, what's happening?
But yeah, I, you know, so when I do this stuff, I kind of have to, like, literally get rid of the fanboy element and, you know, just be a professional and just go in and do my thing, and that's it, you know. And just get on with it, you know. You know, because we're all just people at the end of the day, you know. And that's for me, what I find with playing with these different artists and stuff is that's what they want. They don't want a fanboy standing there. They want somebody just to relax and just do their thing and be comfortable. And, you know, you can be a fanboy if you want in your hotel room,
right? And you could call everyone and be like, oh my god.
The funny thing is, for me, I actually don't get that much. I don't get starstruck that much for people. It's the odd one. Nine again, I go like, oh crap, don't know what to say.
Right.
But but they're all great guys, you know, Ian and all the guys in Deep Purple. And everybody I play with, I can't say a bad word about any of them. They're all really, really nice. All been really nice to me anyway, so which is great, you know.
That's outstanding. So what's coming up with the new album? Are you going out on the road? Venturing out at all?
I'm going out on the road. Not for my own album. I just did a UK tour there. The timing was a bit all wrong. It was more of just me itching to get out and play.
Sure. So, of course.
It was 3 years since we did actually a proper tour.
Yeah.
So we did that, and that was a lot of fun. And the album's coming out May, as I said. And we'll see. I might try and plan some gigs around September time for some stuff, but because, you know, obviously May, June, and July is, for me, is taken up because I'm playing for Deep Purple this year. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see what happens with my own tours and stuff. You know, it's, to be honest, it's very tricky time still out there with clubs and places, right, especially all over Europe. There's a lot of venues that have closed down, and then there's a lot of people are still a little bit nervous about going out. You know, even though in the UK and some certain parts of Europe, there's no restrictions at all. You don't have to, you know, isolate or anything like that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's still that mentality with people. It's like, I've got COVID, I have to stay in the house. That's it. Don't move. You know.
Yeah, I know.
But I suppose if you get sick with anything, you don't want to go out really anyway. So.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing I always think about. Like, yes, this is terrible, but really, I mean, even if you're puking or coughing, like, you don't want to go out no matter what it is. So.
Yeah. But I think there's a little bit of, you know, when, you know, people, they feel all right, just maybe a bit of a sniffle, and they can still go about and do their thing, whatever. But, you know, if they take the test, it says of COVID, it's like, psychologically, it's like that switch goes, oh, right, I can't go out, you know, or whatever. But so there is a little bit of that. And there are also ways to factor. I think people have got so used to sitting on their ass watching Netflix for the last 2 years.
So true.
Me included.
Oh, yeah. Me three. I'm with you.
It's sometimes when people ask me to, you know, do I fancy going out some nights? I'm like, nah.
I know.
You know, and then I have to literally drag myself and go, no, get up, get out, go do stuff, you know. So
I know I have to do the same thing. The only thing that's getting me out are amazing. Like, it was miserable here. I'm in Detroit last week. But Sparks was here, and I had to see Sparks. I had to get my butt out to go see them, and it was the greatest night ever. Because otherwise,
I think that's the thing. You know, if there's like a particular band or whatever, you know, a big band that you want to see, people will go and make the effort.
Right.
A lot of the smaller end stuff, people are just like, they're leaving it to last minute, so the day of the gig, they'll go, yeah, I feel all right, let's go. Yeah, you know,
yeah, let's do it. So for the Deep Purple tour, what do you have to do to prepare for that? Are you all ready, or do you gotta?
No. well, to be honest, I know quite a lot of the songs anyway from playing with Ian Gillan and that in the past. But yeah, there's a whole lot of songs I've been working through. There's a lot of new, some of the new stuff I've been doing. You know, as I said, I know a lot of the older stuff because I did it in the past. But yeah, it's like anything. I approach this gig the same as any other gig, whether it's my own gig or whatever. I just kind of, I listen to it all first for like weeks and just really sicken myself with it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I know every single part of the song, you know, what's coming next. So it's not all about the guitar. It's about, for me, it's the only way I can, this is how I do it. Some people are different. I don't pick up the guitar for weeks, and then I finally do to figure out a lot of the parts. But by the time I've got to that stage, because I've listened to the song so much, I have a rough idea what to play on the guitar anyway, because I've heard it so much. So yeah, it's challenging, because Deep Purple stuff is not just normal straight ahead sort of pop rock stuff where it's like you got your intro, verse, chorus, solo, end or something, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like you got your intro, which could be like 4 minutes.
Right.
And then you have a verse, chorus, then a weird section in the middle, and it goes to another song, and then a completely obscure off time section as well. So there's all these little extra things in there which make Deep Purple Deep Purple, you know. So, but it's fun. I really enjoy it. You know, I love playing all that stuff. To me, is just it's right up my street. It's exactly what I want to play, and so I'm loving at the minute, just running through all the songs and just going over all the ideas and stuff. It's you know what, when you learn a set like this from a band like Deep Purple, it makes you appreciate them even more. You know whether it's Steve Morse or Richie, is from a guitar point of view, you just go, these guys are unbelievable, you know. And the whole band are unbelievable. So it's a lot of fun, you know. And but I learn their parts, but then I also try to make it my own. because I am me. I'm not Steve Morse.
Right.
I'm not Richie Blackmore. I'll never play like Steve. I'll never play like Richie, but I'll take little parts and try to blend it with my own stuff as well. And the beauty about the guys in purple is that's what they want. They don't want Steve Morse part two coming in or Richie Blackmore part two. They want me just to do what I want to do, which is great. You know, but there is certain things you got to play, you know,
right.
You know, if you take like Highway Star, it's, you know, it's everything in that is just constructed perfectly. And I'm listening to it going, well, I wouldn't do anything better. So I'm just going to play that.
Just go with it as it is. Yep.
You know, and that's, I learned that from Don Airey years ago. And it's that old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I'll do that, play that. Because Don plays a lot of John Lord's solos as well, because they were all amazing. It's like, well, I don't think I'd come up with anything better than that. So I'm going to play that because it's pretty amazing. So yeah, but it's fun. It's all good.
Well, that's a testament to your talent too, because you know, it's like, you know when to hold them, know when to fold them, right? Like, you know what it, and know to like, this is, I don't have to be heard as myself in this moment because it's perfect the way it is.
Yeah.
But here's a place where I can be me and not just be covering their work, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's you just gotta, you know, listen to, you know, the songs and just see, okay, what's, you know, like with some of the Blackmore stuff, there's a lot of improvised stuff you can tell. And it's just, you know, it's, that's where you have the freedom then to be yourself and experiment and try your own thing. Whereas there's certain songs, as I said, you just go, no, I'm just going to play it exactly as that because it is what it is.
Awesome.
But it's just recognizing that, you know, within the songs. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So
just readjust.
The Fighter by Simon McBride is available on May 27th. You can catch him on the road this spring with Deep Purple. For more information, check out his website, simonmcbride.net, or you can follow him on Twitter, where he is at smcbridemusic. Find him on Facebook, where he is at facebook.com/SimonMcBrideGuitarist, or follow him on Instagram, where he is at Simon McBride.
You can check us out on all the various socials. Be sure to visit our website at rockandrollgradschool.com, and don't forget to leave us a review.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hegquist. Our reluctant producers are John Sauvay and Sandy Stone. Our willing producers are Rachel Allen and Randy Jeanette. Our intern is Zach Jackson. This one's for Philippe. Thank you, good night, and may all your favorite bands stay together.